Welcome to the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show, where we tackle violence against women and girls through education, empowerment, and hope. Join Kate, a survivor and advocate, as she shares insights, strategies, and stories that inspire healing and action. Together, we'll break the cycle and pave the way for a future of safety and strength. This show contains a trigger warning. And now, here's your host, Kate Beasley.
So welcome back to another episode of the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show. And today I am joined by Kathleen Miner and Aisling Owen Nash. Welcome,
hello,
ladies.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
So both of these ladies are part of an amazing charity called Hopeful Handbags. And it was actually Kathleen that set it up. Kathleen, would you like to tell us a little bit more about Hopeful Handbags?
Yes. So Hopeful Handbags with two L's, like full of hope. And we did that because, you know, never underestimate the power of hope, right? How many times in our lives do we just say, you know, if we have that little grain of hope, we can hang on and we know that things are going to get better, especially with a rah-rah cheering section beside you and behind you and in front of you and just leading you along the way and holding your hand. So that is kind of the real base of what we do. And then I'll go from there. But I started this because my mom grew up in a very abusive home. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I knew this since a young age. And the reason why I knew this is because we lived across the street from my grandparents. Now, my mom, though, was in the middle of 11 children. So she has had siblings that were like mine and my sister's age. And they lived across the street. And there was chaos that would break out. And they would, you know, Debbie. And my mom would send her younger siblings across the street to my sister and I. And I remember standing at the fence and just watching. And I always thought, gosh, what is going on over there? Like, something's not right. Because I didn't grow up this way. This isn't normal. This isn't what I was living right across the street.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, I knew that there was abuse going on. I mean, I knew that there was physical stuff going on. But at like 5 and 6, you know, I just kind of, okay. So it just stuck with me. And it stuck with me for years. And I always wondered, why did my grandmother not leave? I always wondered that just in my head. And as a kid, and then I raised my own kids. And unfortunately, my grandmother passed away over 35 years ago now, at a young age, from a, you know, brain trauma. And, you know, I think you can only get hit so many times. So, you know, she didn't get to enjoy the rest of her life. And I wanted to know if my grandmother knew that there was a place to reach out to with no judgment at all, if she would have reached out. And of course, this was years ago, right? So things were a little different then,
yeah,
too.
Absolutely.
And I had heard of people collecting handbags and, you know, just for other different kinds of things. So I thought, you know what? My grandmother also always had her handbag. She would hold her handbag close. That's the one thing, whether she would leave for a week or so with the kids or whatever. She always had that handbag. And I remember us going, I don't know if you guys have JCPenney's over there in the US, I mean, UK, but there's a store, a department store. It's not even really around here much anymore. But my mom would take her to JCPenney like every 6 months and she'd pick out a new handbag. Now, in that handbag was always a necessity. So I just wanted to start raising hope to these domestic abuse survivors. So first what I did was I went and got certified to be a domestic abuse advocate. So I went through the training. And the first thing I learned was there's no one reason why people stay. Okay. So that kind of started my journey of thinking through all of this, because luckily I didn't grow up in an abusive home.
Yeah.
But my mom, not only did my grandfather abuse my grandmother, but he abused all the children too. So that's why we also work with the children.
Yeah.
Because they didn't choose to be there either, you know? And so that's kind of just the base of why I started it. And it just took off. So first we were just filling handbags to raise hope and let people know, you know what, we're on your side. We're here to help you. And then it just became, there's more needs here. There's way more needs here. And that's how we came to do what we're doing now, which is our mission, which is safety, number one, health, wellness, and long-term sustainability. And what goes in that with sustainability is financial stability, right? So we make sure that everybody's on that path because we know statistically that's why people end up going back.
Yeah.
It's a big reason, right? They can't afford to be on their own.
Yeah.
So we do not want that. So much more goes into this. However, that is just the base of what we do.
But you also fill bags up, don't you, of essentials to
okay.
go into the...
So let's talk about that. Yes, hopeful handbags. Why is it called that? Because what we do, that is still the base and the core of what we do. And that is really to open the conversation and raise hope and give people necessities that they need.
Yeah.
Because they typically leave without anything. So these handbags are filled with all kinds of necessities. Anything that you think is a necessity is probably in that bag. And then we do a few extras, as we like to call it. You know, maybe we'll throw some bath bombs in there or, you know, a piece of jewelry or something special in the bags.
Yeah.
And we write notes, uplifting notes, and then we tag the bags. Now, this really opens up the conversation. And the reason why we tag the bags, and I just want to tell you that, I wasn't tagging bags at the beginning. Tagging meaning putting a tag on there that says Hopeful Handbags. This is our website. You know, this, right. And the reason why I started doing that was two reasons. Number one, I noticed when we would deliver to shelters, some other people would have donated handbags, which is great. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But when you look inside of those handbags, it would be like, you know, half used bottles of lotion or makeup that was already open and things like that. And what I was told by the ladies who worked in the shelters was that, you know, we have to double check these bags because we don't know what's in them. And also some shelters don't allow razors. Some of them don't allow mouthwash, you know, so we had to. So I was like, okay, these tags do two things, what I found out. Number one, the shelters now know if they have a Hopeful handbag and it has a tag on it, it is 100% safe for their shelter. Yeah. They don't have to look through the bag. They can hand it out. The other thing is people were reaching us for help because other survivors were giving them the tags and saying, reach out to this organization. Mm-hmm. So it was like a card that people could reach out for safety.
Yeah.
And people typically contact us before they call the shelter and before they call the police. And that is because we are not a shelter and we are not the police. So they do contact us first. And then, yeah, there's times when, depending on the situation, the shelter might be the best place for them. Or obviously, if the police need to get involved, we've got to go that route as well.
Yeah.
But it's the persons that open up all those conversations. It's the handbags.
Yeah. Yeah,
for sure.
And of course, Ashlyn does so many events around Ireland.
Oh my gosh.
This lady's events are, I've heard so much talk about how amazing her events are. And honestly, I attended one in Dublin the other week, and they were amazing. This woman works so hard on these events. What inspired
and
you
it
to get
shows.
involved, Aisling?
Sorry, what was that?
What inspired you to get involved with with Hopeful Handbags?
Well, I met Kathleen and yourself actually through the Mums in Business International Network, and I had seen the work that was happening with Hopeful Handbags in the UK. I had seen it being talked about, and I kind of just wanted to know more. And I still remember that first Zoom call we had, Kathleen, and me saying, gosh, I'm here in Ireland and I've just started as a MIB leader in Ireland and I'm the first one here. So I don't really have a massive network here yet because we didn't, but like I literally was the first MIB in the whole country. But I said to Kathleen, I don't know how we can do something here, but I want to understand how it all works in case I can do something here. And it just kind of stemmed from that first conversation of understanding how simple it was actually, in fact, to just start collecting handbags and donations of supplies and getting a group of people together to pack those bags and have a chat and see the conversations that were happening and then getting those bags delivered out to the nearest refuge. And once I realized it was literally that simple, to make a difference. I was like, how can I not do this? How can I not? I do have family members who are survivors or currently still living with it, both male and female. Not that some of the people in my family who are currently living with it, I don't know right now if they recognize that that is what they're living. I think they do, but they're not leaving yet. And I also kind of felt like, well, if I can't help in another way, I can help in this way and show that there is support and help available, and show more people, not just my own family, but as many people as possible in this country, north and south, that when we come together, we absolutely are stronger and we can make a massive impact. And the feedback, what really stuck with me, Kathleen and Kate, is I did my first larger event in March 2023, so just coming up to 2 years ago. And I invited one of the refuges to come and speak at it because I wanted to raise money. And at that event, I had pledged to collect supplies and help raise money for one of the water tanks. Because while we're talking about the handbags today, we also do water tanks and help in schools, and we do a lot of work in Kenya as well. And I had pledged that the funds that I was going to get from running that event, I was going to put towards a tank, which I did. I'm very proud to have done because, there's 8,000 people now with clean water and children who can go to school who wouldn't have been able to before if we hadn't done that together. So we do a lot of things, but I ran that first event and the assistant manager of the refuge got up and she shared. And I think it was the first time that it really hit home. Like I knew we were making a difference, but this is when it really clicked. Like it really clicked. I'd already been delivering bags for just over a year to them at that point. But it really hit me when she said, it's totally changed how we now interact with our service users. Because now we know we can put that bag in that pod and they don't need to come out and ask us to get our supplies. Like they've always had supplies. She said, look, we've always had supplies. We always get donations of stuff, but we just have this big press, this big cabinet, this storeroom of supplies, where when somebody asked for something, we would give it to them. But then we realized when we started putting the bags back in the room, the power was back in the service users' hands. They were fully in control. They weren't now having to ask us for anything the way they would have to have asked for things at home. And that was just like, wow, if it's even changed how they're looking at what they're doing. Like that's just, I just think that's amazing. And one of our ladies who came to that event, and Kate, you met her, Ashlyn, she came to that event. She's a survivor herself. She had her own business. And after hearing that refuge worker speak, she decided to essentially put her business on a bit of a pause or reduced her business. And she went back to school, trained as a social care worker, and she is now working in the refuge part-time that we deliver to. And she's told us like how she now gets to be one of the people who physically hands the bags and gives the bags in the rooms to those people. So you just don't know the impact that you can have with one little handbag. Or one little conversation. And I just think it's really powerful.
It really is. And we've been told numerous times these aren't just bags with essentials either, even though they are, just as Ashley said. But as they're picking it out themselves out of these beautiful bags that have been thoughtfully and lovingly and caringly put together, it's like the shampoo, they're saying it's like hope. It's like self-esteem. It's like self-confidence. My self-perception is raising. As they're pulling it out.
Dignity, yeah.
Yes, and they're also what I've been told, oh my gosh, is that their kids see the smile on their face. And that is huge because these children have not seen their parent. Typically, it's women. Like Ashley said, there are men as well, and we do man bags, we call them. We do have those, but typically, it's women that will either come forward or come to our organization. But the children light up too. And so it's a domino effect that these bags have. The other thing is as Ashleen said, the group gets together and does this, right? There's a group that comes together. The conversations that get open during putting these bags together, there are people that would have never opened up and shared the things that they've been through. And they start talking about their childhood and what they've dealt with then. It's a therapeutic session, is really what it is. And we do the same thing. We have teen volunteer days. The teens come and they're really there to fill handbags and do volunteer hours. But oh my gosh, the same concept as the ladies. The conversations that open around relationships are just, it's heartwarming because they're not all positive. Most of them aren't. However, everybody's helping each other and everybody feels like they now have something to
Oh,
relate to. And
yeah.
it all started with, let's bring some handbags in with some essentials and let's
And
fill some bags.
it's the cards as well, the messages that we write so that the women know, so that the recipients know. We haven't just, got together an assembly line, though I do mine in a bit of an assembly line fashion to save time. It's not just that a group of people got together and shoved a bit of stuff in a bag. We really care, and the energy in the room when you're doing it, because these conversations are opening up, like you literally get goosebumps. And I personally always invite a refuge to come. Whenever they're available, I always reach out to them in advance and say, please, can you send somebody to talk? Because I am not a survivor myself, and I do not work directly with survivors. So personally, I don't feel I'm the person who should, I'm talking about the impact of the handbags, but I'm not best placed with the expertise to talk to them about if they have experienced abuse. So I always invite the outreach team or the education team or one of the housekeeping staff. They come and they talk about how they can help them, and they're there if they do need talk or further support to talk or further support. But the other thing that Kathleen touched on, if it's okay, Kate, for me to just say this, is you said, Kathleen, that it also affects the children. Well, my son, and Kate heard me share this the last day we were together, my son turned around to me when we went to Donegal and did a big thing. We had done 83 handbags that day. And he said, Mummy, how many people have we helped today? And I was like, I don't know, how many bags did we do? And he goes, yeah, but it's not just the people from the bags. And I was like, what do you mean? And he said, well, how many people get the bags? And I said, but there's 83 bags. And he said, yeah, but they're there with their children too, ma'am. And I said, oh yeah. And he got out his calculator. And we'll just do an example of if it was 15 bags and the average family coming in is maybe one parent and two children, those 15 bags directly impact 45 people. And then he said to me, but what about the people that love them, mummy? So I said, gosh, yeah. Well, what if you even had 12 close family members who really wanted those people to stay on their journey to safety? And they were impacted by the fact that we delivered that handbag. That's 540 people who have been impacted by those 15 handbags. Then think about the staff. How has that helped the staff? How has that helped the service? And like Kathleen said, what if five of those people pass on those tags and those five more people and their family are then positively impacted? You're in the thousands then. So I think, and I just think children, and this is why children are so incredible and so amazing. They see all of these things. And that has made me completely relook at every single handbag. I'm like, okay, every single handbag, that could be 15 people.
Absolutely. Yeah, and he's spot on. He is wise beyond his years because that's exactly right. And that's why we do this. And to some, that don't know the impact, like Ashley was just talking about, might think, okay, well, that's a handbag. I can throw a handbag together. I mean, I will say, and even when handbags come in already full, we still have to take apart that handbag.
Agree.
Because we want to make sure that we have everything. We'll just add to it if we need to, but it's still just with the caring and the love that the person who donated that bag and filled it with, we make sure we just keep pouring that love in there because we know how much this is going to impact not only that person, but the whole string of people. Because yes, even the people that we help, I mean, by helping, so and so that's got two children find a place to live, Well, that's impacting. I mean, how many of us that have kids aren't worried about our kids at some point, right? Oh, thank goodness that, we've got somebody else on our side to help. And the kids see all of this. And I believe that that's a domino effect too for when these kids get older. They know the power that they have, that when they're helping one person, they're really just not helping one person. Even though that's enough, it's still not just one person.
Now we're just going to break for a short interval and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the book collaboration that myself and a whole bunch of other authors are coming together with. And this has been put together by these two wonderful ladies. So we'll see you after the short break.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
So, welcome back. Now, just before the break, we were talking about Kathleen and Ashton were talking about how the infect or how it impacts the children. I know this is something I speak about quite regularly on the show, but it massively impacts the children, massively. Even if you think that they're not affected, I mean, how many people say, "Oh, kids are really resilient, they bounce back." Let me tell you, they do not bounce back. What they do is they mask. They mask very, very well. They develop coping mechanisms from a very, very young age. So even if they are quiet, seemingly perfectly behaved, actually what they could be doing is just drifting off into the background and numbing out is what they could be doing. People seem to focus more on it when they are misbehaving, but they're behaving badly, they're being violent, they're being aggressive. That's more prominent to people. And the unfortunate thing is there is a lot of people can be they're too eager to go racing off looking for, oh, I need to assign a label to this. I need a label. I need a label. They're not disordered. They're traumatized, and understandably so. Even if you think that they've not directly been exposed to things, that maybe you think that you've protected them from a lot of the what you've been exposed to, they pick up on it. Even as babies, we learn through mirroring. That's what we, how babies learn and they develop. They learn through observation. They watch us by, and that's how they learn to speak and everything. So they pick up on our energy. I mean, I have pictures, before and after pictures of my daughter, 2 months apart, where one, she looks like any normal, happy, go lucky baby. And the next one, you can see clearly the trauma in her face. It reflects outwardly on their face. It's only if you look, if you put two pictures side by side, will you see that. Again, the same with yourself. If you put two pictures of yourself side by side, you will see it. It always reflects outwardly on your face. It'll be in your eyes. So don't ever underestimate that. And again, it's what we're seeing an awful lot of now. And again, it's not something that people like to admit. And again, that's why a lot of parents are eager to go and seek a label, is kids abusing their parents because it's learnt behaviour. But this needs to be put into check, because if we leave it unaddressed without teaching them that actually that behaviour is not acceptable, all we're doing is setting them up for failure in their life. And the very thing that you've saved them from by getting yourself out and safe, they could potentially end up becoming that person themselves. And that is something we don't want to happen. This is the whole reason why we have such a huge pandemic globally. The fastest growing age group is between 16 and 19. And I know here in the UK, you know, we've had so many cases where younger youths are committing the most horrific crimes, taking people's lives, other kids. It's horrific. It is really, really, really horrific. I mean, I assume you guys find the same things when in the US and Ireland, do you?
Oh, yeah, I definitely see it. And unfortunately, what I see is it's not even just kids that are coming from abusive homes, which if you really think about that, that could affect anybody, right? But it also needs to be handled the same way. And I say that because of the influence of what kids have access to these days, yeah, right? Social media.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What yeah. their peers have access to or what their peers are seeing. And so much is done now on the phones that the kids, even if they grow up in a nice, loving home, say,
yeah,
they're still being affected. So imagine the kids that aren't.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Now they've got, oh, this is the way to do this. And then we can get onto this conversation too in a minute, but I don't agree with... some people, depends on the wording you use, okay? But kids need boundaries, okay? Like, we've got to hold our kids accountable as well. We're not their friends.
No.
We want to be their friend. There's a fine line, yes. Am I friends with my kids? I say teenage years. I mean, I've got some kids now in their 20s, in their 30s. Oh, my gosh, yeah. But, and yeah, we are truly friends. But my husband said to me at one point in my life, because I have four children, he was going through a teenage year spurt, if your kids do not say they hate you at some point, then you're doing something wrong. Because I was just devastated. I was like, oh, because I was laying down boundaries. Because like you said, they start to show little things. And luckily for my kids, they did not grow up in an abusive home. However, they're still getting that influence.
And you said exposed it, in the media.
Yes. Well, and they're also exposed, not the media too, 100%, because boy, that's a long conversation. But you know how I said it always stuck with me? I wasn't in an abusive home.
Yeah.
But I could see it and I could recognize it.
Yeah.
And I remember being five and remembering that. And it stuck with me.
Yeah.
I mean, luckily, you know, I had boundaries at home and stuff. But I also was more of the mindset of how can I change this instead of, you know, acting out in a different way. But it did affect me and I didn't even live in it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a combination of, it isn't just about, you know, enforcing these boundaries and obviously consequences when needed, age appropriate consequences when needed. It's about making that child also feel safe, emotionally safe, because this is the root of it. You know, if we consider perpetrators, they are very deeply wounded souls. They are. They have, I mean, even my ex, I have a lot of empathy for what he went through as a child. He had a horrific childhood. Genuinely, I've got a lot, but even despite everything he did to me, I have a lot of empathy for what he went through. But that is no excuse for that behavior. And, you know, so children need to feel loved. They need to feel safe, emotionally safe, and they need to feel held. The balance is, and that's really challenging for a parent to find that balance of making them feel loved, held, and supported, and heard, whilst enforcing these firm, healthy boundaries that, you know, they need to honor and respect. You know, like in, you know, in life, we have to do things that we don't want to do, unfortunately, and. You know, there's a fine balance between, okay, yes, you've got to, it's good that you've got spirit and you can speak up for yourself and, you know, you stand your ground. And I like that. However, there's a time and a place for it. And that's a difficult bit.
And I love what you said about safety, because that's absolutely true. They need to feel safe and they need to be in a safe place. So when it comes to survivors, I work with a lot of survivors' children, a lot of them. And obviously, you know, once it gets to a point, we offer them the other support that they need. But because the parent, typically the mom, is like, I can't do this by myself, though. I feel like I'm by myself and I don't know. I don't have anybody to lean on anymore. So we first, as an organization, we do one-on-one mentoring. And that is also with kids, mainly the ones that are brought to our attention are like teenagers and like the age group that you're talking about, Kate. And so, you know, we first make them realize that they're safe now. Now they're in a safe spot. You can talk to us. There is no judgment here, but we have to be transparent. Yeah. You've got to tell me everything. I promise you, I'm not going to be surprised. And we're going to work through it. Wherever we are, we're going to work through it.
Yeah.
But then after that, okay, I feel safe and I can openly talk, then we start helping with the boundaries as well. And then the parent, the mom also, oh, okay, now that somebody else is helping with that as well, it gives them a little more of confidence too. And also the kids aren't just thinking, oh, this is, I mean, if she says that again, you know, that's what they're thinking. What kid doesn't say that, right? Yeah. So I agree with what you said. They have to feel safe and they have to feel heard. And then there has to be boundaries. And I could tell you stories of just many instances, but we'd be here all day of, I mean, we encourage these kids and we stick with them side by side until they, whatever their goal is, do they need to finish school? Do they need to go get a job? Do they need to weed out their friends? Do they need to do where step by step? So we are not only one-on-one with the parents, but with the kids as well. And if they're under a certain age, then, you know, and they're not to that point yet, we hook them up with whoever they do need to be.
Yeah.
So we resource out a lot.
It's about, you know, it's about teaching them how to understand their own emotions, their own emotional triggers, and how they respond in certain circumstances, you know, and what may be a better way to respond. It's teaching them that awareness before they can use tools to self-regulate in the moment. They first have to have awareness. And many adults, never mind children, don't have that awareness. So, you know, first we need awareness.
Yeah, because we can't, you don't know what you don't know. And I always tell people, you know what, if you're aware that there needs to be a shift or a change, you're over halfway there. You've already might as well say that you won, because you have, because I will bet you 80% of the population, they don't even take a minute to say, I wonder why things aren't working out so well.
Yeah.
I also think, like, on this little piece around, you know, you're saying that these children have witnessed things that they should never have had to witness or experience or be aware of. And that's kind of monkey see, monkey do. But we're trying to prevent that monkey see, monkey do. But when the mom or the dad, whoever the survivor is, starts making the changes for themselves, that mirroring happens in another way. So I've even seen it with my children, and not from an abuse perspective, but I've seen it in my children, from where I've turned around my life and changed my health and my mindset, that they follow suit. So, you know, it's not just that maybe not all children will end up in one-to-one mentoring, like Kathleen said. Maybe they may not need it by the time they get to that point, if the parents have done enough work on themselves. And I feel like if you help the mom or the dad first, and you get them to a great place, then the children can get to a great place too. Yes, the children need other supports and they might need their group programs, and they're brilliant things for them to be able to have those safe spaces with other kids who've been through what they've been through. But like you even said about the bag, Kathleen, even seeing their parent smile because of a handbag has an impact. So when they see their parent making positive changes for themselves, they will naturally want to make those positive changes for themselves too, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, a lady I'm supporting at the moment with a police situation. She said to me the other day, I've barely slept. Is it selfish to send the kids to my mom's so I can just have a day to myself? I said, absolutely not. I said, at the end of the day, if you're not regulated, that's going to reflect outwardly on the children, and the children are going to pick up on that. So, it's the classic, safety things that they go through on a plane. You must put your own mask on first before you tend to anybody else. And it's the same situation here. We have to make time for ourselves. And so many parents will say, no, kids have to come first. Kid, no, you have to first, because your well-being is a priority for their well-being. So we're just going to break for another interval, and then we will be back talking about the book.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back. So we're just going to come on to the book collab. Hopeful. Well, it's actually called Handbags, isn't it? Whose idea was it? Was the book? Because I know obviously it is obviously both you and Aisling and you, Kathleen, are both on the book as
It was
name.
Ashling's idea. It was Ashling's idea. She always,
Wasn't.
like you said about her events that are amazing, she comes up with amazing ideas. It is what it is. She
Yeah,
does.
I guess part of it was obviously I love networking, and I met an amazing lady called Orla Kelly last year, who's a book publisher, and she came along to one of our fundraisers last March. I met her in February. She came to our event in March. She heard all about Hopeful Handbags, and a couple of weeks later, she reached out and she said, "Ashling, I've been thinking, have you guys ever done a book?" Because I had been saying, I'm looking, if I had said to the audience, if you've got any other ideas on how we can fundraise and raise more awareness, I'm open, please send me a message. So I guess it was kind of Orla's idea, I guess.
Right.
Alongside me, and Orla is our publisher for the book. But I looked at it. You know what? We've run so many raffles, and I was like, there's only so ma many raffles you can do. Like, and I know people love a good raffle. They love a good hamper and they love a good prize. But I kind of had a feeling for myself that I felt like I was just always asking people for supplies or money for a raffle. And I wanted to try and do something a bit different. So I was like, do we do a sponsored walk? Do we, what are the other ways where we can raise some awareness? We've looked at doing a movie night, a sing-along movie night to Mamma Mia, actually, believe it or not, where we could just have a load of women together and raise funds, sell tickets, raise funds for Hopeful Handbags. So we've had lots of different ideas, but this one was really doable. This one was really doable to find 12 people to share some stories of hope. Was going to be a lot easier, and I feel really great about the concept that we're going to sell these books, we're going to help to change people's lives through the stories, and we get to raise the funds for Hopeful Handbags at the same time. And people get something physically in their hands. Every single person, not just the winners of the prizes of the raffle, every single person gets to walk away with something in their hands, and knowing they've financially supported us. So that, I just think it just, as a concept, it made sense that there would be something tangible at the end of the process.
Yeah, because with all these women's stories, and again, it's like, okay, with a donation of blankety blank, however much it costs, you're getting this and you're helping this. By one donation, you're getting all of this stuff because it is gold in that book. I have had the honor of interviewing these authors, and absolutely amazing. The thing I also love about the stories is that they're all different,
They're
right?
so
And they're not
different.
so very different, and they're not all about, you'd think, okay, this is Hopeful Handbags, the nonprofit where we're helping domestic abuse survivors and their children, but this is not all about abuse. This is about How do you get from one thing to the next? So some of these stories don't even have any of that in there, but how do we get that motivation, that drive? Because the one thing that we do know is, you know, in life, we know that growth involves risk, right? And with risk is fear. So no matter what you're coming through, you're going to feel like this is fearful. What do I do? It's uncomfortable. And it helps people when they read these stories. So you know what? If they did it, I can do it. Because so many people get stuck in the uncomfortable, but that uncomfortable, they know it enough that it's comfortable for them. But they don't want to feel that other uncomfortable because they don't know what that one feels like. Mm-hmm. So this stories in this book just reminds people of that.
In fact, and 8 out of the 12 stories don't touch on abuse at all.
Right.
So
it's inspiration.
I just think, you know, it is. It's, you know, that moment, right? I think we've all had a moment in our lives when we went, huh, that's an idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think we could make that idea work. And really, it's about that. Because I asked the question when I was putting it out to our community, like, who would like to be involved in this book? And here's the question. If I were to pick up your handbag 5 years ago and look inside it, what story would your handbag have told me that day? And if I was to pick up your bag today and look inside it, what's the story that it's going to tell me today?
My because handbag's very minimalistic now.
But we do carry around our lives in our handbags. Like, there are things that represent what's going on in our lives in our handbags at any time. Mm-hmm. And I put it to our community and said, if you have a story that if we unpacked that story from that handbag at that time, what we want to show is what's the journey from then, from that version of what was in your handbag then to now? Because all it takes is that was all it would have taken and all it has taken for each of the people in their stories is that there was one defining moment where they realized there was some hope.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They took that hope. And they didn't just let it go on by them. They took action to turn that hope into the happiness and the life that they have now.
Yeah.
And that's what this book is about.
Mm-hmm.
It will also contain, you know, resources and places where people can go and find help. We're not going to not touch on that at all. We do want it to be a book that people will keep and they can tap into and use as a resource. So we'll have some international resources for DA supports and national ones for around Ireland and Northern Ireland and some for the US as well. But predominantly, we want people to be able to pick this book up anywhere in the world, pick a chapter, read it, and think, I can do it too.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. It only takes that one little seed of hope to give somebody the strength and the inspiration to push forward, you know, and don't look too far ahead. We need to just take baby steps. Baby steps is the absolute key. So you can take, you find that seed from somebody else's story and you make a plan and you start to take baby steps to move yourself slowly, slowly forward to freedom.
Yeah, baby steps are great. And we always encourage with Hopeful Handbags. I always ask, what's your biggest dreams? What would you do if nothing was holding you back? And nothing you tell me is going to be too big of a dream. And then we go from there. And then, yes, then we take those steps to get there. But that's what this book does, because at the end of each one, when people see where they are now,
yeah.
And I think too, by going through trials and tribulations, which everybody does in life, yeah, we start to realize too that we can get through this too. And by seeing other people's, like Ashley says, those sparks of ideas come too. Mm-hmm. Like, never thought of that. It's like networking in a book without leaving your house. Like, you know, you don't have to, you're just like, oh my gosh, I feel so amazing. So I feel honored to be a part of this. I feel honored that we're going to be able to help more survivors and their children by the money that's raised from this book. And really that's very, very important because even though we are 100% volunteer organization, it costs money to help people.
Yeah, it does.
It does. Every necessity, every need, and we help people with anything that is going to attribute to their long-term sustainability.
Yeah.
And so that could mean that is such a huge range of things that we
There's a
can't just
big mission,
pinpoint.
don't we, Kathleen?
Huge mission. And there's not a list of, oh, this is what we do. No, because there isn't just one or 10 or 20 things that we do. Each section, each person, each family, each survivor, each child has their own needs. And that's what we do. One case at a time is what we do. One case at a time.
Yeah.
I just have to say this really quick, though. These people become such a huge part of my heart. And I think they do with Ashling too. Anybody that you come in contact with and being involved in something like this, I think about these people all the time, every single person we help. And also in the middle of the night, a light bulb will come up. Oh my gosh. Oh, why didn't I think of that? So then I call the person, hey, listen, got an idea. And
Yeah.
then, to get them to their next
Yeah.
step. So it's
Yeah.
always on our
Yeah.
minds.
Yeah. Yeah. As I say, two heads are better than one sometimes. And yeah, you've got to work, also work on yourself to be able to keep watering that little seed. Once you've gained that seed, you need to start working on yourself to be able to create the space, to be able to water that and come up with these ideas. But yeah, if you've got somebody else to share that load with, I mean, it obviously makes that process an awful lot easier. So thank you, ladies. And the book comes out. When do we launch? We launch on the
So the digital version is available on Kindle from the 21st of February, and the physical paperback will be available for purchase from the 6th of March, a couple of hours after we officially have the very first physical copies available at our big fundraiser in Belfast on the 6th of March, because it's World Book Day that day. And 2 days later, we have International Women's Day. So we would love your support, ladies and gents out there, to make this book an international bestseller by International Women's Day and raise awareness and funds for a great cause.
Well, thank you for joining me, ladies. And we shall see you on the next episode.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in and being part of this vital conversation. If you feel inspired to take action and support women, girls, and children affected by abuse, please visit the show notes in Kate's bio on UK Health Radio. There, you can register your interest in becoming a certified trauma-informed expert, specializing in topics that address this ever-growing crisis. Together, we can shape a safer future for those who need it most. Until next time, stay strong, stay informed, and remember, you are never alone.